Independent Nation.
So, episode 199. Adam, are you still there?
I'm still here. Okay.
So, what do you want to start off with? Masters or tournament?
Get the hell out of here.
Tournament?
Yes.
Okay. Any specific angle you want to take right off the bat?
Does Wii qualify as an angle?
Oh, happy day.
I think so. All right, who wants to count me down?
I will. Oh. Yep. Episode 199.
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy? 5, 4, 3.
Welcome to the Brothers in 3Z, the Sports Bar Talk podcast. Sports talk like you and your buddies talk. Eating wings, having beer, and a sports bar. Email the Brothers in 3Z at brothersin3z@yahoo.com. Visit their site at brothersin3-z.com. Now put on your iPod, pull up a virtual bar stool, because you're now sitting with Adam, Trent, and Ryan, the Brothers in 3Z.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome once again to an episode of Brothers in 3Z, your sports bar talk podcast. I am your host, Trent. I'm here with my brothers, Adam and Ryan. We're here to talk sports just like you would, sitting in a sports bar, eating chicken wings, drinking beer, watching the NCAA tournaments, and watch upset after upset after upset go down. And that's where we're going to start. We're going to start with the NCAA tournament. And if you haven't heard, the Final Four, your Final Four teams are Butler, Duke, West Virginia, and I can't even remember the other.
Michigan State.
Does it matter at this point?
No,
really? It doesn't really. I mean, I was like, oh yeah, Michigan State. That was just on today. So, as you may or may not know, listening to this podcast, we are natives of West Virginia and big fans of West Virginia. And this is the first time in our lifetime that West Virginia has been to the Final Four, capping off over what 50 years or about 50 years of going to the tournament every once in a while. And then, you know, throughout the 80s and 90s, getting there was just great. And, you know, if you could knock off a team, even better. You know, within the last decade, getting there, been to the Sweet 16 a couple times. And now their first Final Four appearance in our lifetime.
I never really thought about it like that.
Well, how did you think about it? Or what did you think about it? Like when you saw, like last night when it all went down.
Well, I'm probably, I don't know. I don't know where I fall on the skeptical scale with you two. But I really didn't believe it until there's about 4 seconds left.
I know, you're like, okay, how many three-pointers would it take for them to actually win here?
Yeah, and it gets to the point where like, oh my God, we're going to be the team that blows it like that. You know what I mean? It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't quite that bad, but even as I was watching it, I was a little bit behind when I got started, so I was kind of zipping through some of it, but I was like, okay, you know. I thought after that first half that they kind of blew it. No, not blew it, but like had not wasted. Shot so well that there was no way they could play like that, and Kentucky hadn't played very well, and if they started playing well, West Virginia was in trouble.
Right.
But obviously, you know, that didn't happen, and you know, not to be like Jack Buck, but, you know, I don't believe what I just saw. But it was a little bit like that. You know, when they went against Kentucky, I thought, oh, I don't like that's Kentucky's just got too much. I think they're probably going to they're pretty similar to West Virginia. So I didn't think that was a good matchup. Probably a little bit. Well, not a little bit, but more talented than West Virginia. I didn't even like the matchup against Missouri. You know, going back then, because of the way that they pressed and all that other stuff, I didn't like that matchup. I wasn't too concerned about Washington for whatever reason, but I just didn't think that that would happen. And you know, earlier this year, Ryan and I talked about how we felt about West Virginia and that they weren't playing very well or what to our eyes. And I think what has been said is kind of lend some validation to that is that they've gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, over the last, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, month and a half. But the other part of that, too, that I don't think that I probably fully gave them credit for is that they, you know, they play these kind of ugly games every now and then or more often than not, but they force the other team to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where it is what West Virginia is doing. It's not the fact that the other team just had a bad shooting night or whatever. It's because West Virginia is making them do that. You know, this whole tournament, the opposing team has shot, you know, not very well. And it's like, well, how many nights can you just say that team is cold before you give credit to West Virginia? And, you know, when you look back at it, you say, geez, it's their defense. You go all the way back to the Big East tournament when they're winning 52-50 or whatever it was, you know, games in the low 60s, you know, high 50s. That's how they play and win. So that, you know, one of the big things we've talked about is their lack of ability to shoot, and of course they come out and they just drain them from all over the parking lot yesterday, and those things will bubble up, and that was, you know, but the other team's not going to shoot that well either,
right?
You know, so they don't need to. But you know, that's just the thing that kind of made me laugh is that we can spend this whole week talking about West Virginia against Duke and what we think and matchups, and then all of a sudden somebody hits, you know, Joe Mazzulla is hitting three, John Flowers is hitting three, and it just turns whatever analysis you think on its head, because if you're breaking down the game, well, you want West Virginia to shoot perimeter shots and settle for jump shots, run their offense. Well, if for some reason they just are going nuts, you just turn everything on its head, you know. So I don't know.
I tell you what, I was going back to Trent's original question, you know, kind of when did you really kind of think that this was happening? I started to personally kind of hyperventilate when we were up by 16. And I looked at the score, and I thought, you know what? We're 4 points away of having a 20-point lead against Kentucky. And that made me extremely nervous and, like, excited. Like, I knew – like, this was going to maybe happen. Now, you know, obviously they got cut it close and, you know, got it to, I think, six there at some point, you know, within a minute, minute and a half or something like that. But at six – it was almost so sickening – to be up by 16 with still, I don't even know how much time was on the clock. I mean, it was like 5 or 6 minutes. I mean, you know, there's still plenty of time, but, and Jay Billis has to, of course, be the voice of reason. Oh, there's still plenty of time in this game. You know, don't go anywhere. It's not over yet. And yeah, no, he's right. I mean, he's watched West Virginia play enough to know that it's never really over until, like Adam says, until there's about 4 seconds left on the clock. But I think looking back now, that made me probably more I semi-realized that it was going to be a very uphill battle for Kentucky to come back and that it was a real possibility that West Virginia could win this game, you know, all in kind of the same moment there. And that's what really kind of made me almost want to throw up.
Well, remember a couple of years ago when they played Louisville and they I mean, yeah, I'm sure you do, but they were going nuts at shooting and shooting and shooting. But everybody, I don't know, I was like kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop and dropped. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, well, you know, they can't shoot like that forever, and they did it. And that's kind of the way I felt watching the game. But gosh, I really didn't think I'd see it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to go back to what you said, Adam, about us. I'm sorry, Trent.
That's
but,
okay.
But about us kind of criticizing West Virginia and some of the things that we had criticisms about, I don't want to say they've completely remedied them. But they have. I mean, some of the things that we talked about was poor foul shooting, right? And they've been pretty good at the foul line since three weeks before the end of the season, you know, 2 weeks before the end of the season, something like that. You know, let's see, what else did we talk about? Point guard play, you know, and I think even before they lost Truck, I thought Joe was getting a lot more minutes. He had brought a lot of stability to the offensive end of the floor and done some of the things that had concerned, I think, both you and I, you know, up until that point. As they went through the Big East tournament, he got more and more minutes and obviously had to play a ton, you know, in the tournament these last two games as well. So, you know, I think that, you know, some of the things that were the concerns that we had, I think they've done a good job in righting the ship there.
Yeah, and this is kind of backtracking a little bit, but did any of you feel kind of relieved that they had at least made it to the regional final, and that if they lost, it would have been to a number one seed and not like stumbled before then to kind of give fuel to everybody's fire about the Big East
kind
and
of.
West Virginia and all that stuff? I was kind of like relieved, because if they lost to Kentucky, there would be no shame in losing to Kentucky.
Right. That's the way I felt too. I did too. Yep.
It's funny because when they were up 16 points, you know, it's funny because you watch, I don't know, over the years and years and years, you watch so many of those types of games slip away that the fear that they were going to blow it was like an equal to the excitement that they were going to win it, you know, at that point. And people were, and I don't know where these people come off, like texting me with 5 minutes left in the game, ooh, let's go to Indy, or, you know, woohoo, you know. So it's like, stop cheering. Did you guys forget watching the Pitt game when they blew a 10 point lead within 60 seconds?
Jay Billis did. He brought it up.
I know. I'm like, you know, have you watched this team? How long have you been a West Virginia fan to get so close to something only to have it slip out of your fingers? Why are you jinxing me like this? And it was just weird because watching it at every moment, just like you, Adam, it was up until probably within the last, well, I think the ball went out of bounds with 4 seconds left. And at that point, you know, I allowed myself to celebrate a little bit at that point. But
now, do you think as a fan and whatever we do here, but do you think that do you allow yourself to think that they will win two more games?
I've thought about that today and kind of thought about, I haven't thought about what overall that means. I've just kind of thought about the, is it possible type of scenario? And you know, just kind of the, I don't know what it's called, X and O's, but kind of the breaking down the competition. Okay, what's ahead? What are the matchups? What can they do? You know, and to be completely honest, obviously this team isn't fazed by much. And I think that's one of the things I like about it. They never get rattled. Never rattled. I mean, they could, you know, they didn't hit a 2-point shot in the first half. And that even though they had a lead, they're not, I mean, they're just not, you know, shakable. And looking ahead and kind of spinning this forward a little bit, you know, I don't see now this is not saying that they can't lose, because obviously they can lose. I mean, anything can happen in this tournament, but looking forward, there's not a team left that is as talented, has as much talent as Kentucky had. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no team left that has as much talent as Kentucky had. What's that mean? I don't know, but I think that, you know, I think that's very capable. They're very capable, even though I just saw somewhere where Duke's already a 2-point favorite over West Virginia, which I couldn't be happier about.
Yeah,
I really couldn't.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. There is now, I don't think, a team in the field, you know, there's only four now, of course, or three others, that there's nobody out there that they can't beat. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean,
right.
That means, I think, if West Virginia plays B or better, they're gonna have a chance. You know what I mean? And that's not the case. That wasn't the case, I don't think, at the beginning of the tournament. I would have said Kansas, Syracuse, you know, some of these other teams that didn't quite make it. That West Virginia, even if they played almost, you know, A plus, they would have to play A plus to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're gonna have to obviously play well, but the gap, you know, of all these other teams isn't there. And I'm telling you, the defense, and I imagine that's going to be the theme all week, is the defense. But it's nothing you can reconstruct because of their size. It's not their speed or guarding you or the scheme. It's how big they are. And you just can't do anything to duplicate that. So, I mean, yeah, Mike Krzyzewski's going to know how to do a 1-3-1 and blah, 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 blah. But how is that ugly bastard Singler gonna go against Ebanks? I mean, seriously, that guy's ugly as shit.
He is. Well, you're right. I mean, that's one of the things
like
you can't simulate.
Right.
You can't simulate in practice. You can simulate the 1-3-1. You can simulate some defensive schemes. You can simulate, but what you can't simulate is you can't go out off the street and grab, you know, three or four guys that are all 6'8" better, and throw them out there and try to play against it.
Yeah. And to go back to your question originally, I don't think I'll allow myself to think about them winning two more games. You know, I'm just right now just kind of enjoying everything. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, I think everybody does this, but I'll say it out loud. You know, I think if you think too far ahead and like, oh, national champions, you know, you start to think like, am I jinxing this? Is, you know,
come on.
I do.
You got to take it one game at a time as a fan too, huh?
Well, I guess. I mean, I don't want to. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to start thinking like about national championship and being in that game, because I know they have another game to play, and I know that just getting this far is pretty special. I mean, it's not something that team's done in 50 years. So, you know, to just be like, oh, okay, now on to the next one or on to the championship game. You know,
I don't know if this would happen, but you touched on something, and I don't want West Virginia fans to think that this is going to happen every year, or that this is their birthright. If they get to the Sweet 16, then it's a disappointment. I mean, I think you have to remember how hard this is, how rare this is. You know, I said it to Trent the other day. You cannot just discount Deshaun Butler's influence, and he's just so special that even if you have a senior, it's different. I mean, he's one of a kind. You're not going to have those all the time. Now, you don't need those all the time, but this is, you know, a once in a lifetime type of player. This is a great run. This is, I think everybody should be really excited and happy about this, and not feel like, you know, of these other schools that we criticize, like Notre Dame, thinking that they belong in a BCS bowl every year and all that stuff. And I don't know that that'll happen, but that's just kind of course, my fear, or my cynical thinking, thinking, oh, God, that now this is going to start something that West Virginia thinks they're going to have to be in the you know, whatever. But, you know, so that's, you know, my hope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly realize that, you know, Huggins hadn't even been back to the Final Four, and, I mean, this is almost 20 years for him. You know, since he was last at the Final Four.
92.
As a coach. So, you know, and going through, you know, Cincinnati and K-State for a year and everything like that. I mean, it just takes a lot, and everything has to kind of come together. So even when you have the best team, like you felt he had the best team when he had Kenyon Martin at Cincinnati in 2000, you know, still shit happens.
Yeah.
You know, somebody twists an ankle or breaks a leg, and, you know, that could bring the entire team down.
It's such a delicate combination of so many different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of it's draw, some of it's talent, some of it's luck, some of it. I mean, it's such a mix just to get this far. You know, I mean, like Adam said, now that we're in a Final Four, you know, you really think about how long it's been and how many teams that you thought could get there and how close you've been a couple times and those type of things. And not just West Virginia, but other teams. And it might be one of the most difficult things to do. I mean, you know, they're talking about Duke. I mean, Duke, you think Duke's been around. They've been in Final Fours. They haven't been there since 2003, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a while for them. I mean, you know, it's you can have some droughts where, you know, you're losing first and second round games. And even if you do have one of the best teams, I mean, you know, I'm sure Duke has been ranked number one at some point between 2003 and now. And, you know, obviously didn't make it even to a Sweet 16 or Final Four. So, you know, it is very, very difficult. And, you know, I for one, you know, was not the happiest person in the world when they hired Bubba Huggins, but he has impressed me over and over and over again, especially in this season. But you know, I'm constantly amazed by how good of a coach he is, because I honestly thought he was a guy that just recruited five guys that had athletic ability, threw the ball out there, and just let them go at it. And I have just a completely different view and respect for what he's done at West Virginia in 3 years.
That's actually a pretty good. Oh, I was going to transition that a little bit, Adam.
Well, the point I wanted to make about Huggins is, and we can roll back the tapes when he was hired. The only thing I said is, I hope he's different. I hope he's not the same coach that he was at Cincinnati, getting the same kinds of players that he was at Cincinnati. And I think that we've seen that that he has changed. Now, you know, it looks pretty similar, but, you know, the guys that he brings in are good players, and it's not these one-and-done players. They seem to be, in most part, you know, ever since Tiger Woods, you can't really say anything without, you know, qualifying, but they seem to be good people. They're not getting in trouble all the time, you know. He's not thuggins.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he's still trying to shake that. You know what I mean? People that are just kind of looking in saying, oh, Thug, you know, Huggins, here he is. He got these guys, you know, just kind of rented players and all this other stuff. He's still going to have to fight that a little bit. Ironically, I think Deshaun Butler helps him a little bit, even though he was, you know, Beeline's recruit. But, you know, he is not the same coach that he was at Cincinnati as far as those kinds of things. And now that without having to do, you know, make all those leaps about the kinds of players, it's allowed him to show himself as a better coach and put that on display rather than, you know, you have to kind of weed through, well, he got, you know, they bent the rules to get this player in school. That guy never goes to class. These people don't graduate. Now you can see him, you know, as a good recruiter and as a good game coach now more than ever, I think.
Yeah, and just kind of piggyback along, you know, what Adam was getting to with the defensive comment earlier, and to meld that with what you guys were saying about Huggins, you know, the in-game coaching that he's done just throughout the tournament is something that I've really kind of noticed. You know, just his, when he came out and played 1-3-1 almost the entire game yesterday, I was like, well, that is, I mean, that was brilliant almost. I mean, it's just like, oh, well, of course, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you don't have people banging in, and you don't have to, you know, waste your energy with this man-on-man stuff, trying to stay on wall and everything. You have a young, inexperienced team. There are people, Hubie Davis, who does commentary for ESPN, has no idea how 1-3-1 works. So you're going to tell me that these freshmen coming in are going to be able to figure it out within a game? I don't think so. You know, so I was like, wow, that is, I mean, it was just almost so obvious to do, but he, you know, the fact that he did it was like, oh yeah, well, of course. And then, you know, the way he's been working in the players and finding the right lineups, you know, when they were playing against Washington, they bring in Klitschla at the end of the half when Pondexter was out. It's like, hey, let's put in a big man to score points while Pondexter's out. You know, and then when Pondexter comes in, we don't need Klitschla. Let's put in Flowers to defend him the rest of the game. I mean, it's just those types of small things that is like, wow, this is, he's really getting it done. He's really coaching a lot better than some of these other guys are right now.
Yeah, although,
especially when you look back at the, I mean, one of the things that came real clear was the, you know, how poorly Kentucky was shooting from 3-point, you know, line the two previous games. And you know, and then adding in the fact, okay, well, they haven't made a three. I think they went 20 straight or something like that, where they hadn't made a three. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. You know, he went to the 1-3-1 and said, okay, prove it. Prove you can, you know, shoot yourself out of this, and
then we'll switch. Yeah.
I like the fact that how Billis was all over Calipari though, especially there towards the end of the game. He's like, no pressure on the ball, and Missoula's out of the game. You know, he didn't take him, but he should have.
Oh, absolutely.
that kind of cracked me up.
Yeah. Well, one more thing to go back to.
He's got to be on the final game.
Yeah, he should be.
He's not.
Who is? Oh, Jim Nansen. Yeah, that's right.
Clarkella, yeah.
But anyway, going back to the defense and the, you know, that's one thing you can bring every single night too. I mean, yeah, their shooting is going to, you know, sometimes you're going to hit every single three you shoot in the first half, and, you know, sometimes you're not. But the one thing that you, the two things you can do every single night, regardless of who your opponent is play defense and get rebounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, it shouldn't matter whether you're shooting the ball well or not, who's hot, who's not. Those things don't matter. You know, when you can always have the effort to go after the ball on, you know, for rebounds, and you always have the effort on the defensive end of the floor. And I think in a lot of ways, he's just kind of left that, said, you know what, that's going to be turn around and make our offense, is if we can do these two things well, then our offense is going to play off of that.
Well, and you know, just to give you a little bit of perspective too, I also equally believe that it's me sitting on the right-hand side of the couch that gives us a chance to win as much as, you know, Huggins is coaching, so yeah, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I won't take it very far.
Yeah, I don't expect you to. You have any other thoughts on the other teams in the Final Four? You know, who cares?
No, I don't care about them. Quickly, Ryan, what do you think about Huggins's jump? His
pullover.
His attire. I have to honestly say, if I was a coach of a basketball team, I would probably come out in polo shirts. Everybody wear polo shirts. You know, slacks, and everybody wear a team polo shirt, you know, like a golf shirt. Just because, you know, I've coached before in a suit and tie, and it's absolutely miserable. Yeah, does he look bad? Yes, I agree that it's not the best, you know. But I think I saw Texas Tech. I think Bobby Knight's kid does. He does that. Everybody wears polo shirts, and his whole staff looks alike, and you know. And I actually don't mind that. But you know, I don't know. I mean, it's his thing, and you know, if he's comfortable in it, and you know, I know everybody makes fun of him, but it's better than that gold suit.
Okay. Well, I just wouldn't go on the record that if I had to pick, I wish he'd wear a suit. But I know everybody's now saying, I can't take the pullover off now. I mean, my God, they're in the Final Four. So, and obviously, yeah, his coaching is equally linked to his attire. But
exactly. And me sitting on the right hand side of the couch.
All of them
me wearing the same shirt since the Big East Championship. And, you know.
And all things considered, I think there's a lot worse things that he could wear. I mean, it's still, you know, it's...
Well, yeah, Trent. I mean, really, we could go a long way with that one.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not like he's coming out in a leather thong or anything. But I mean...
Or that leather jacket that Gil Calla used to wear.
Oh yeah.
So whenever... Actually, you could use that as ammunition or ambition. Ammunition the next time somebody says, I can't believe he wears that. He said, you ever see Gale Callad in a leather sport coat?
That's right.
I'd be glad he's wearing this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it looks awful. I mean, I think, you know, it's... I'm trying to think of... I don't know. I just don't think it looks...
Bobby
bad
Knight wore the sweaters. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's... I would put it along the same lines as that. I mean... You know, I don't know. I mean, what would you think about if they were all wearing polo shirts, Adam? Is that still not?
If everybody was, that's, yeah. I mean, that's fine. It's the fact that there's the disparity.
Right. That's what I don't like. Yeah. I mean, I actually wouldn't be that mad if everybody was wearing pullovers.
Well, yeah, yeah, but it just looks like it. And my point the other day was, I just don't think it reflects. You know, and he takes great care of the perception of the state, or he's very mindful of it. And I just think that this is not the greatest representation. Now, I don't want to make more of it than it is, but
sure.
If I had to pick, I wish he'd wear a suit.
Well, and my point was him wearing a pullover is not going to, you know, or him wearing a suit is not going to make people say, well, everybody in West Virginia must be, you know, classy, well-dressed and wear suits. You know, I don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, whether or not he wears a pullover or a suit or, you know, an astronaut's outfit, people are going to find a way to perpetuate the stereotype that they already have. So it makes no difference. Anyway. You want to move on to the Masters?
Oh, sure.
Let's go move on to the Masters. Tradition unlike any other.
One thing tied Masters in basketball. Is CBS obligated to play that?
You know, I was
music
just going
time?
To comment on that. I mean, where's
they
the music?
They did that during the game last night, like the crowd, the pep bands, and then all of a sudden they turn everything else down, and then Dick Enberg starts talking about the Masters, and there's that wispy music. You know, I'm like, what the hell is this? Every single time they talk about the Masters, got to play this music?
And they must be coached on the way they need to announce it because their voice does change.
Oh yeah,
it's like. And coming this weekend, a tradition. You know, everything gets softer, and the music comes up, and it's like, oh, do. So that's going to come up this weekend as well. Is that that's this weekend?
That's right? 2 weeks.
Two
it's
weeks.
The weekend after.
That's sorry. It's 2 weeks after. Sorry. Anyway, so it comes a couple weeks, and we have, you know, Tiger back in the field for his first tournament back.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard.
Yeah. Breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
What are they going to do? Pair him with Phil?
Yeah, I think so. I think that they think that would be awesome. I think that's a quote. So the Masters.
I think that's a quote.
Make shit up here.
Allegedly.
Uh-huh. So, with the Masters coming in, Tiger was, you know, going to come in, and how much do you think that he will dominate the coverage during the tournament? You know, it's one thing that I find interesting because, yeah, he's going to be there, and I think people want to see him, but how aware is CBS going to be of showing him and not showing him and talking about him and not talking about him? Because, you know, the Masters wants it to be about the Masters. They want it to be about, you know, the course and the cabin and the fireplace and the green jacket and all this stuff. But, yeah, I mean, and I know that that's what Tiger Woods wants too. I mean, CBS, to some degree, has to play by their rules if they want to keep it too. So how much do you think that they're going to be able to get away with stuff like that?
Well, I mean, I think they're going to stick to golf.
Stick to the playbook?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to make much mention of his layoff. Well, they might make mention of his layoff, but they're not going to – I mean, saying that he hasn't played competitively since X.
Right.
And that's probably it. And the only thing that you will hear about, in my opinion, is redemption. And there won't be any other – reference other than what a great comeback, or, you know, bounce back. It's gonna, in my opinion, it's gonna be like that. You won't hear, I don't think you'll hear Elon's name once,
unless she's there.
I don't think you'll hear the word transgressions.
She's not gonna be. I would be very surprised if she's there.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but you know, I think they're gonna stick to golf, and boy, that was a great 330-yard drive. Now he's got a wedge into this par five, and if he wins, it'll be about redemption and the sweet comeback or whatever. But there's not gonna be any kind of penetrating, probing discussion about his absence and layoff and all that stuff.
What about their television coverage? I mean, you know, Tiger's used to, or we're used to seeing Tiger almost every single shot he takes. Do you think he gets that same type of treatment, or is that going to be pulled back a little bit?
No, I think it's – well, I think –
is there going to be a Tiger cam on the DirecTV?
Probably as a featured pairing. Yeah, and I think – but that's the way it was before. So I don't think anything changes. I don't think you hide him any more than before, and you cannot show more of them than you have in the past because you've showed every single shot. So yeah, it's not unusual to show every shot because he's the biggest draw. Mm-hmm. Whether he had this happen to him in the past or not, he is the biggest draw.
Yeah. Now people want to see him. There are probably a number of people who want to see him fail as much as they wanted to see him succeed before.
Do you think – I mean, I was thinking about this, that I think he hasn't done like the greatest job rehabilitating his image, but like I don't think you can squeeze anything more out of him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's nothing else, in my opinion. He doesn't have to answer any more questions about this. He doesn't have to do. We're done. But so having done that, I think it's time that the sentiment then changes. You know what I mean? I think this stuff is in the past for a lot of people. Although maybe this his first time out, it's still going to be kind of fresh. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, I've never been a huge fan anyways. But I think for a lot of people, the sentiment's going to be the moving on part. But I don't know. Maybe – who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be relevant as long as he's, you know, at the top of the leaderboard. I mean – you know, if I'm sure they'll show as much as they can of him Thursday and Friday, but if he's not at the top of the board, I think they'd be very quick to not go to him every single, you know, for every single shot.
Well, but that's how they've done
it. Especially if he's out of it early. There's been some times when they go back to him, you know, regardless. I mean, you know, oh, he's only, you know, 10 shots back, and you're just like, why?
Well, I don't know, but because – usually he's about 5 or 6 shots back and with 2 par 5s coming up, and he can eagle him. I don't know. I've never seen, like, at the Masters. I've never felt like that the coverage, because they do have their kind of rules, and one of them is we show the leaders. We show the final group, you know, this all this other stuff. Now, other tournaments, they'll show Tiger no matter what, you know, what is going on. But the Masters wants to see the final pairing and the final groups. So, I don't know.
I think right now all I want out of the Masters is that Angel Cabrera not be in the running. I really like him.
We're going to have to see a lot of him. He's got a lifetime pass there.
I know.
Yeah.
But I really don't want him to be. I don't want to be in him. And I don't know.
Yeah, he's kind of.
And he's, I don't know. He's, I don't know. There's something about him rubs me the wrong way.
Okay.
Good. I was going to ask something, and I can't remember what I was going to ask.
Anything about Phil?
What about him?
I don't know.
No.
I wasn't the one with the question.
Well, I
was trying to jog my memory, I think.
Gotcha. I think I'd like to see some youngsters and even some oldsters.
How about this? Do you think he'll be, do you think Tiger will be competitive? I know he's playing like every single day up there right now, but.
Yeah.
I do. I don't know why he wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean.
I can't think of a good reason why he wouldn't be competitive.
I agree, because I think that, people are talking about him being,
obviously the layoff. I mean, yeah.
Right. But how many tournaments would he have played by now anyway? Two? The difference isn't all that great, and that if he was playing his quote-unquote normal schedule, he may have a tournament, maybe two, not playing a tournament ahead of time maybe affect him. I don't know. It'll probably – but we've seen him have bad days, like up front, and then come back, 3 days later. So it may just take him a day to kind of knock the rust off. But I think he'll be competitive.
Yeah, I don't see why he wouldn't be. And I mean, I put me in the camp that believes he could absolutely win.
What's that?
I said put me in the camp that thinks he could absolutely win.
Yeah.
Not that he absolutely will win, but that he,
Well, right. And it is – I don't want to say it's different, but, obviously the course is always – I mean, he knows what to expect. It's not like one of these places that has the site rotate or is playing a new course or,
Yeah.
I think the likelihood of winning something like this is greater than one of those, obviously.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. Like, if I were going to lay money down, I wouldn't put money on him. But, I certainly wouldn't be shocked to see him win. And I wouldn't be shocked if he won, like he did in, 97? By 20 strokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he just started off and just got on a roll and just destroyed everybody.
It could happen. I mean, I think he could go out there and run away and hide.
He might take advantage of me like, this is the first time I don't have to answer questions about, Thanksgiving and, whores and all this stuff. I can just take my shot and text messages that might be leaked on Deadspin. And
yeah.
Now, does this – I guess if we want to kind of spin this forward a little bit, does he – play a more robust schedule depending on how he does, or does he kind of back off again and we don't see him until the next big tournament, or does that all kind of depend on how well he does
here? I think he kind of continues on normal. I don't think he's going to play any more than he used to. I don't think he's going to play any less than he used to. I think he goes back to, he just picks up the schedule as he would have last year. That's the way I see it, because he just seems to be that type of person to not want to disrupt his own routine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can plan on him playing all the majors, and other than that, who knows?
Yeah. All right. Anything else that you wanted to talk about, bring up, discuss?
Nah.
No? Ryan?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
That's good. I'm giddy.
It is quite exciting.
It's going to be a long week, boys. It's going to be a long week.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I used to getting games on Thursday or Friday or something. Now you're going to have to wait all 5 days. It's going to be a long week. But I guess that will wrap things up for episode 199. Going to go ahead and put this one in the books. Official scores table. Ryan, why don't you tell the good people how they can get in touch with us?
If you have questions, comments, email, send them to brothersin3z@yahoo.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/brothersin3z. Also become a fan of us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com to search for brothersin3z, and there you can become a fan of the podcast as well. Always iTunes, download and listen. Just do a search for brothersin3z on the iTunes podcast section there, and you can find all of our episodes as well as the homepage, brothersin3-z.com.
100 different ways, and it can't be any easier than that. So with that, I want to thank everybody for downloading and listening. For Ryan and Adam, this is Trent saying, remember, the next one is on us. And hear me echoing in you. I can see me in you.
Oh. Well, you complete me, so. I want to get in shape for the summer, though. I don't want to have I want to be able to mow the lawn with my shirt off. Is that so wrong?
That's my whole goal, man.
I'm a pasty, sticky mess. Whee!
Giggity goo.
Giggity giggity.
Yeah, once we start talking about the game and everything, I was like, oh, man. Oh, yeah, I want to comment about that. Oh, yeah, I want to comment about this. Oh, yeah.
Missoula took advantage of whenever Cousins was not at that end of the floor. Like, he was still, like, trying to get his fat ass down the floor.
Yeah. He was killing John Wall for not coming over on the backside there. I mean, like, yeah, I guess he should have been over. It's not like that basket was, you know, he didn't rotate
well,
over.
Bam, bam, yeah. I mean,
yeah, it was one of those curls.
He made the stop.
Yeah, it was one of those curls, and John Wall was weak side. He should have been yelling at the defender for keep going over top of those curls. But I was like, man, that seemed a little unnecessary to get him on that one, but I'll take it. I mean, just kill him.
Yeah, well, it balanced out Enberg. Enberg, who did nothing but slurp John Wall from the time he stepped on the floor until the time
he could remember his name.
Oh, he's been brutal. He not good anymore.
How'd you like the retrospective of Dick Enberg? We're gonna send you out with this 10-second retrospective when we're coming back from halftime.
Yeah, just random.
Was this his last one?
I think so.
I mean, I fast forwarded through it, so you might think, like, how in the hell did you miss this? But
no, it was easy to miss if you DVR'd it. Like, yeah. If you're just fast forwarding until they walk out onto the court, then you missed it. Because it was, like, you know, 10 or 15 seconds. It was like, oh, yeah, my friend Dick Enberg.
You know, you can always tell when a guy's, like, at the end where he tries to call the game around his catchphrases. You know, it's like he's looking for a place to put in an oh my when it's like not 100% natural. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my, they sub in John Flowers.
Yeah. Hey, do you really think that 6'9" girl from Baylor's a girl?
Yes.
Did you hear her talk?
No.
Okay.
If I hear her talk, am I going to think differently?
Because you're going to expect a different sound than you get. I was watching the post game after she had like 14 blocks against Tennessee or something like that.
Yeah, we just tried our best. We knew they were going to be tough.
Who does the Kindle think they're fooling? If you hold up a Kindle and an iPad, I mean, really?
I don't know.
What'd they do? They did some sort of comparison?
Well, no, they're like advertising, kind of. Yeah, I've noticed a couple advertisements for them or something that makes it seem to me like they're trying to kind of get out in front of the iPad popularity. And listen, mm-hmm. I'm not a big iPad person, except for the fact that it looks cool for e-books or whatever. But, I mean, there's just side by side. It's like, come on, get out of here, Kindle, really?
Something like that.
Or any smartphone, really.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it depends
on how BlackBerry coming?
How heavy you're
sorry.
Gaming. Go ahead.
What?
It's important.
How's the BlackBerry coming?